I'm Marianne Williamson.
Jack Canfield.
Sabon Kusume.
I'm Doreen Virtue.
My name is Dominican Reese.
Hi, I'm Carolyn May.
This is James Van Prague, and you're listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman.
Keep doing what you're doing, Greg. Balancing the negative radio broadcast with positive energy.
Welcome. Yeah, baby. Welcome. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. You know the gig. Sex, relationships, dream interpretation, personal growth. We talk about it all. We don't tell you what to do or even how to do it. This show is all about you. This show is about your strength, your power. And if we were to tell you this is the way or the right way or the thing that you should be doing, how would that possibly be of service to anybody? So the bottom line is this. It takes happiness. It takes courage to have happiness, and it takes courage to have love. And if you want some courage, you want some happiness, come with us on an inner journey. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. I got to tell you guys, I just got back from Joshua Tree. I was teaching a workshop out at Shakti Fest, and it was off the charts. Some of the greatest yogis in the world were there teaching classes. Some of the greatest minds, excluding me, we're teaching workshops there, and the music was phenomenal. My favorite is Larissa Stowe and Shakti Tribe. We've had them on the program a number of times. They are amazing. But I got to teach a class that I really feel is desperately needed. I got to teach a class on men and spirituality because by far and away, I'm telling you, I was out there the demographic was about 80% women and about 20% men, if that. I mean, the women outnumber the men in a ridiculous extent. And I'll tell you the truth, if you look around the world that we live in a spiritual pursuit, you will find that to be more common than not. As a result, something has happened from both sides of the gender fence. Men approach spirituality in that dynamic in a very feminine way because that's the model that has been set for them to follow. And women almost have an expectation that men feminize themselves to a certain degree in order to fit in. So what does it mean to be a man in spirituality? Well, you cannot really even discuss that question until you discuss what it means to be a man. And it's really not asked that often. What does it mean to be a man in this world? And I don't know anybody else that says this one, but really my take on this is pretty straightforward. The man is the house, and the woman is the home. What I mean by that is a house has walls, and it has a roof, and it has windows, and it has doors, so there's things that could go through in and out, but it's a container. It keeps you safe from the elements. And it also, by virtue of having walls, has limits, has boundaries. And what I mean by the woman is the home is women make that house a place that you'd like to live, not just a place that you'd like to exist. If you look at a place that a man has made, a lot of times it is about as utilitarian as you can get it. It's lacking the creature comforts. It's lacking the warmth. It's lacking the nurturing. It's lacking the support to make it inviting, to make it welcoming, to make it nurturing and rejuvenating. And if we could approach our lives, of course, not hard, fast, rigid this way, but if we could approach our lives appreciating that a pound of feathers is absolutely necessary and a pound of iron is absolutely necessary, and yet they each equal a pound, then I think we're all going to be better off for that. We'll be back with more Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and our guest this evening is Robert Perala. You are going to so dig listening to him. We'll be back right after a little multi-love.
Be your friend.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio, broadcast from Laguna Beach all over the world. You know, if you want to find us on social media, it's Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. If you want to email us, it's greg@gregfriedman.com. And if you want to check out the website, it's gregfriedman.com. I don't know if y'all know this, but one of the many things that we do here, and specifically I do with Inner Journey, is I take people to work with Indigenous elders all over the world. Stay tuned, because very soon we're going to have a couple of trips coming up to Peru to go into the jungles to go work with an authentic shaman in the Shipibo tradition. We're also going to head up to Machu Picchu. It is going to be just off the chains. You will dig it. Again, it's Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. We have a couple of your email questions. We have Greta all the way from Sweden asking, why should I study for the future when nobody's doing anything to save it? What's the point of learning when the greatest scientists are being ignored by our politicians? You know, this question reminds me of when the Mayan calendar was coming up in 2012. I had clients running around going, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. What are we going to do? What do you think is going to happen, Greg? And I was pretty darn consistent in my response. It was, are you living today or are you existing today? If you ain't living today, then don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow doesn't matter. And if you are living today, then you're so involved with this moment that tomorrow, whatever happens, happens. And that's okay. The next question we have is from Sandra in Newport Beach. She says, I am about to go to my school prom with a very old friend. We've been just, in air quotation marks, just friends for as long as I can remember, for years and years. But I'm not sure whether he has different things in mind. What do I do? The answer is really simple, and it goes like this. A long time ago, I was teaching a workshop, and there were about 20, 30 women and one other guy there. And the guy was telling a story, and he said, I asked my girlfriend if we had a chance together in the future, and she said to me, yeah, you know, you have about a 3% chance. And all of the women in the room started cracking up. And I looked at the guy, he looked at me, and we knew. Because what they heard was, you have no chance in for anything with me. What he heard, and what every man hears, is, I have a chance. If you do not tell a man directly, and sometimes what it seems harshly or abruptly, and you feel like he may think he has a chance, he's going to believe that he has a chance. You need to keep this in mind, not only for your sake, but for his sake as well. We are going to be back with a little bit more Inner Journey and a lot more Robert Perala right after this break.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California, and broadcast all over the world. Our guest this evening is, you guys are in for such a treat. Robert Perala is the internationally acclaimed author of The Divine Blueprint and the new revised edition of The Divine Architect. His books and life work have inspired an event that were inspired by an event that happened in 1977 when he was taken aboard a spacecraft by three extraterrestrial astronauts. He was returned, sunburned, and covered in a honey-like substance. Now, I know y'all want to hear this story because I do as well. Robert, welcome to Inner Journey.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. That's lovely to hear you.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you on air. I got to tell you, I'm going to start with the first question that I ask every guest. But based on that introduction, I got a strange feeling I know where it's going to go. We have had medicine men and shaman and authors and artists and people of all kinds of different walks and methods of being of service. And to a person, there was a catalyst. I wonder if that was true of you. That really thrust them on their path. What's your story?
Yeah. Well, I was like anyone else, you know, a normal kid. You know, I didn't expect anything like this to happen. You know, I was always, you know, curious about the nature of existence, you know, things like the origin of the soul. I was always asking, you know, what's this all about? You know, why? You know, a lot of questions that we all ask, you know, how did I get here? What's this all about? You know, and now 30, I'm 63 now.
I love that you're even surprised by that.
Yeah. You know, I'm almost like, you know, oh, you almost can't believe you've lived this long and that it came to this. Right. And so this is going to be my story and I'm going to be an author or talking about metaphysics and the nature of existence. I don't know that, you know, don't you ask yourself once in a while, how did I get here? I mean, Greg, now you're a talk show host talking to thousands of people and you go, wow, it's come a long ways, you know, but we have to ask deeper questions and that's what we're here for, you know?
All right. So tell our listeners your story. What was, I'm assuming the event that really thrust you on your path was that, I'm going to call it an abduction. You could correct me if you'd like. Is that correct?
Really, in essence, it was. I didn't know it at the time because I didn't even understand it. But essentially, I was in the Lake Tahoe Mountains. This would be when I was, 22. And it was December 26, 1977. And I was on a skiing vacation up in the area, what's called Heavenly Valley, of all things. And then it's where California and Nevada meet at Lake Tahoe. And I was studying a little bit about meditation. I kind of get the idea that thoughts were things and maybe more tangible. And I was reading an article about that you sent a thought form or you concentrated your thoughts into the universe, you know, that there's actually something or something or some kind of force that actually can hear that and might even respond to it. And I really didn't take it too seriously, but I concentrated my thoughts that night and said, if there's anything out there, I would like to know that something is out there, and literally did a small meditation, lit a candle, and I went to bed that night, and I thought, well, you know, someday it'll reveal itself as life unfolds, but it came a lot quicker for me than I thought, and about 2:30 in the morning, I was completely startled awake, what looked like an arcing storm in the room. It just seemed like the whole room had become charged with a lightning storm inside the room, and suddenly what appeared in front of me looked like 3 8.5 foot tall, what looked like astronauts of some kind, and they appeared in this incredible arcing storm, and I know that sounds incredible, but as I started to sort of scream, because the mind doesn't have room for that, you know, something like that manifest in the room, your mind has never room for that. And as I started to scream, I was suddenly encased in like a blue bubble of some kind. And suddenly I was floating above the bed and I couldn't move. I could hear my thoughts as though they were in the back of my head somewhere. And I, these astronauts looked like they were wearing silver spacesuits. They had visors. I saw no faces. They had like an orange antenna on top that glowed very brilliant, brilliant orange. And it looked like they had flashes of lightning almost coming off of their suits, and that the suits even themselves somehow seemed to be even alive themselves. It was almost apparition-like, and it was solid at the same time. And the side of the house dropped away, and there was a swirling tunnel of incredible light. And without warning, I just went suddenly through this incredible tunnel. And I was hurling at what seemed like a 1,000 miles an hour, and it burned terrible, just awful. And I remember at one point even deciding, that I would surrender to death, because you can't exist. You can't exist on fire like that. And I thought, well, I'll die. I'll just pass away. And then suddenly, as I surrendered to it, it sort of let go. It's okay now. And I'm still going at this incredible speed. And then when I began to resist, it began to burn again. And then somehow I arrived in this sphere. And it was gray and illuminated all around, and there was no corners, no walls. There was no distinct lighting on the ceiling or anything. There's nothing in this sphere or in this room. There's no one there to greet me. I know it would be a better story to be able to say that there were beings there that looked like us, and they greeted me and welcomed me and would take me to their leader. That's actually not this story, Greg.
Okay.
And suddenly I was shortening the story, and I somehow was floating in front of this glass object. It was like a giant obelisk of some kind. Came back through this tunnel of light that burned tremendously. It was floating above my bed. And these three tall, luminous, robot-like characters were there, and I was lowered on the bed. And then they somehow went up into this, I don't know, just kind of a vapor almost, and just somehow went up, and the tunnel closed up, and the room went quiet, and I was released, and then I was on the bed. And about, I don't know, maybe a half hour later, I threw up over the side of the bed. I had no idea what had even happened. I didn't understand the experience. I didn't say this is an encounter. That wouldn't come for months. And I crawled across the floor, and I pulled myself up to a little sink that we had there in the vanity in the bathroom. And I turned on the light, and I was sunburned somehow from head to toe. And I was soaked in like a honey or an oil substance from head to toe. It was like as though I was just dipped in something almost. And anyway, long story short, I returned back to my apartment the following day, and my father drove me home, and he kept asking me, why are you so sunburned? And I didn't say anything to anyone because I didn't know what it was. I arrived at my apartment in Los Gatos, California, and as I got home, I had moved into that little apartment the week before, and when I closed the door and my dad said goodbye, that was the first day I was going to live alone. It was my very first day of living alone. I had only lived 1 year before that with roommates. So I was 22 years old, and I never wanted to see anything like that ever, ever again.
Really? That does not surprise me. So do you remember your emotions during that period? Were you attempting to scream? Was there anything? What was your state of being in that period?
I would love to tell that story that I went through this tunnel of light, and it was so beautiful, and it was so beautiful. I mean, actually, that's not this story.
No.
I'd love to tell that story, but that's not the story. The story was, it was extremely painful. It felt like my skin was being pulled off of me, and it was. I'd love to say it was a good experience. It turns out to be a very good experience later on, because afterwards there's a whole series of events that took place by arriving, trying to find answers of what this might be. And at the time, J. Allen Hynek, who founded Project Blue Book, who is kind of pseudo-known as the guy who kind of found the industry as you know it today. He founded the first UFO conference of its kind in San Francisco, California, in April of 78. Mm-hmm. And I saw a book, or I saw a magazine, and in the magazine, incredibly, there was an ad for this conference that was going to take place in San Francisco. And I bought a book at that time with it called Alien Meetings by Brad Steiger that had an article in there written about by Clarissa Bernhardt. She's still alive to this day, who described these exact same characters mm-hmm. that I saw. And the article was called Angels in Spacesuits. And so I arrived at the actual first UFO conference of its kind, really. And it was headed by Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who had a kind of a bestseller, New York Times bestseller out at the time, giving people the idea that, yeah, that people are claiming they have had actual contact. And there was the Hurtaks were there, J.J. and Desiree Hurtak. There was a young Stanton Friedman. He was just coming on at that time. And incredibly, William Shatner, of all things.
Of course.
And there was only 18 of us there that day, maybe 20 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very informal. It was a day-long conference, you know. And I was anxious to tell him my story because I just started to get the idea that maybe this has something to do with extraterrestrials. Is that even possible? Because it took months for me to kind of get my head around it. And now it's gone on for years where I've met many people and many of the leaders in the whole field who have kind of worked on my case and worked on many cases like it. And I've, you know. So this is a phenomenon that's been going on since time began.
I'm going to ask a question, and I preface it by saying there is no intention to be rude or disrespectful in asking this question, but I know that there is a whole bunch of people out there listening that hear something like that, and the first question they're going to ask is, what drugs were you on, if any?
Well, I won't say that I didn't try drugs in those days. I tried, you know, mushrooms or psilocybin a couple of times, but actually I wasn't on anything at all. I didn't know anything like this was even going to happen to me. But you know, there's a whole series of events that kind of happened afterwards that were kind of remarkable. I met Clarissa Bernhardt after this had happened, and I found out we had the Yellow Pages in those days, and I read this article, and I thought, wow, she's somehow in Northern California, and I looked it up, and it said Bernhardt, and it said Saratoga Avenue. I thought, that's right in my town here. I called her up, and her husband answered the phone, and I told him what had happened. And he said, you're the first person that's called that has actually described exactly what we know, what we have had contact with. Can you come here the next day and meet my wife?
Wow.
And I arrived the next day with a little cassette recorder. Remember those little cassette recorders? You push in the cassette, close a little plastic window, plus push play and record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And So I started to, you know, I said, I want to get this on record. I want to hear what you have to say, but I want to tape of this. And she says, it won't work here. I said, what do you mean it won't work here? And she says, well, it won't work here. You're not ready yet. And I was like, what? And so I said, all right, I'll plug it in then. Because I had it on the batteries. I'll plug it into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I press play and record, and it doesn't work. And she says, I told you it won't work here. I thought, what? How can this be? What? And she says, listen, this is just, this, you're not ready. This is in stages. I'm going to tell you some things about this because we've had contact with it. Now, Greg, when somebody tells you that they've already had contact with it, your head spins around and you go, and you're 22 years old, you're like, what? And she said, were they tall and they glowed luminescent? They had visors, yes. I said, yes. And they had like orange antennas. Did they take you through what looked like a lighted tunnel? I said, yes. And then she started describing more things. And I was amazed at how she could tell me about this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said the one thing that just floored me to even to this day. It's a true story. You know, I'm not worried about doubters out there, you know. And yes, I did take drugs, but not that time.
Okay.
She said, they're related to you. Now, when you first hear that, you're like, what? Related? How is this possible? And she said, they know you. They're coming from another time, another space, another area. And let's put it this way. They're sort of vested in this whole experience here. They're vested in you. They're watching. They know about many souls that are being born at this time, coming through, learning lessons in mastery of the different things in the lessons that we learn in life. Say the virtues, tolerance, selflessness, forgiveness, kindness, unconditional love. You learn all these things in this incarnation, and then when you're done, you return back to the source, and then when you are on the other side, you'll remember them. But they came in these suits because they were entering the material world at this time, in this time period, when you're at this age, and they entered the material world at this time, but they're not from this sort of dimension. That's a lot to take in as a 22-year-old.
It's a lot to take in at any age. Let's be honest about that. All right, so let me just repeat that back to you in the way that I heard it. What I heard her say to you is, on some level, these aliens are not aliens as much as their ancestors. It's like, so you could even say, if you were to loosely feedback or reflect it, that these aliens are actually ghosts, are the disincarnate bodies that are now incarnate in a spaceman suit?
Yes. And let's put it this way. You know, a lot of people are sidetracked. Magazines, motion pictures, stories of folklore, magazine articles, the internet, all depicting a lot of times these little short gray characters with big heads and big black diamond-shaped eyes. That is one aspect of what is visiting here. And we're sidetracked by that because it looks so different from us and can be very startling, of course. But what I've been telling people in my lectures for years that I've learned over a period of time and through other experiences is actually there are men and women that are coming here. And they've benefited from greater time and greater knowledge. And at one time, many of these men and women even have lived here and have surely understood the whole physicality cycle of karmic-bound souls that come in their incarnations and live out their lifetimes and return back to source. So you might say that these men and women that are coming here are vested in a very, very expansive DNA process where spirits that need to come in to learn their lessons will come from these other aspects and other planes that are very much like this. And they come in and they take a birth here through a certain, and it's all figured out even before you're born. I mean, the soul actually looks at the geographical location it will come into before mm-hmm. it's born. It will look at the time zone it will come into. It will look at the set of prerequisite of lessons it will come into before it's born. It will look at the parent structure that it will come into. I know there's a lot of people out there in radio land right now. They're going, listen, there's been a terrible mistake. I couldn't possibly have been born through these parents. How did these people, these mass bandits who call themselves my parents, get inside my house, my life?
All right, Robert, you just laid a whole bunch of stuff on the table. You basically said that we're talking about somewhere between predestined living, fate, ancestral or pattern choices, holographic choices. There are so many things that you just laid out that I really feel the need to dive into. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, We'll dive into it with our guest this evening, Robert Perala. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California, and broadcast all over the world. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. And this evening, we are hanging out with Robert Perala. Robert has had encounters with aliens, has spent a lifetime really, and this is just, to me, Robert, this is one of the really cool things about you. You don't just stop at aliens. You really connect aliens with our personal paths as human in spirit and in the corporeal form. And I think that's really something incredibly unique to your own pathway. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners this evening.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So well, it's a long journey, you know, and it's always about it's always about the listener. It's always about the audience. It's always about the people that come and hear this kind of work. They have to go home and live in their own bodies. I think it's great to hear a fun story or a fantastic story like what happened to me. But at the end of the day, I think service is really important that I give some kind of little anecdotes for living and find out other things that I found along the path that I think are very serving and important that they incorporate now, because the planet is going through some vast and sweeping changes in consciousness, and it's happening very quickly because the Earth is sort of being birthed into a slightly larger expression. And so, yeah, you know, with the age of the Internet, with the age of all of the technology that's happening, and also we're being prepared for disclosure well in our lifetime, and it'll come in a myriad of different ways. It's already starting to unfold, and you see movies and motion pictures, just getting you used to the idea.
Before we go there, because there's something huge about what you just dropped, But I want to be true to our listeners this evening. And before we left for break, I told them we'd get back to a lot of things that you laid out on the table, essentially saying that we are in many ways fated to come into this world in a specific manner with specific people. Not that long ago, I had Greg Braden on this program, and he talked about something very, very similar. Greg was saying that there have been a number of studies in the very, very near past that illustrated that the way that we have always come to understand human evolution is completely a falsehood, and that, one, there's signs of humans much, much, much earlier than first recognized, and two, that the way that we have developed is not at all along the chain of evolution as taught pretty much everywhere across the board across the world. And what I hear you saying dovetails into that nicely, but I'd like to hear you say more. So what I hear you saying is that you're up there in some kind of holographic universe and somebody types into a program who you are, what you're going to look like, where you're going to show up, who your parents are going to be, and how you're going to live, and poof, you're in this process. I don't mean to be flippant in the way I express that. So how far off am I from your understanding?
No, I think you just described it. You know, there is sort of a loose blueprint, you know, for life. I mean, when I released my first book, The Divine Blueprint, Roadmap for the New Millennium, which is now incredibly in its 20th year, we weren't, you know, Tony Stubbs and I, who wrote the book, we weren't trying to be too pretentious and act like we had the outline, we had the blueprint. We pointed out in the book that there is seems to be a loose blueprint that many, many agree on as far as the origin of the soul. There's an outline and recurring theme that keeps happening throughout different texts, whether it be the Vedas, the Gita, the Bible, the Sanskrit. You know, there's a continuous theme that they keep pointing out in one language or another, that you know, that there's an overriding divine intelligence that is combining all things together, that intelligence can be accessed. That there is life before birth as we know it, and there is a purpose and a plan, and then there is life after we have the physical world, and so we keep seeing that. I'm not a scientist, but scientists approach and look at for consistencies, look for a consistent theme that has been stated from whatever department, and so. Yeah, we're a lot of people are understanding now and are okay. You know, if you hear the word karma, you know, people cringe. They go, "Oh, please, at the dinner table, not the karma story again."
You know, I absolutely understand. And in the next hour, we're going to get a lot more into what you understand about meditation and how that crosses over into this spiritual pursuit, and that alien worlds and also our own spiritual paths have intersecting lines. But before we do that, a couple things. Just because we're going to be coming up to the end of the hour in a blink of an eye, you know, I've also had Linda Moulton Howe on the program.
Ooh, great.
And I asked her one question that I asked her a lot of questions, but there was one specifically I never got a satisfactory response to. So I want to lay it out to you as well, because you both travel in the same worlds to a certain extent. As I understand it, all presidents are read in to what's going on with aliens, with UFOs, with extraterrestrials. And the thing that makes me doubt the existence of this more than anything is our current presidency. There is no way in heck that I could believe that man would keep his mouth shut if he knew anything. How do you feel? And I'm not, I mean, it may sound like a joke, but I really mean the question.
No, I have to laugh, and I totally agree with you. So why doesn't the current president or any president really, reveal this? It's a totally normal question. My guess is this. The presidency and the Defense Department are linked. They have a culture and a society to protect. They've got a massive amount of problems already on their plate, from international and domestic policy to the current situation with aircraft carriers going down the Hormuz Strait as we speak tonight towards Iran. We have a world of issues with North Korea. We have a society and a culture to protect. And, you know, I think that the president has everything to lose in coming out and saying something that is so far out like that, and doesn't want to open up that side of the narrative, because if you open up that side of the narrative, then you've got to continue it. You've got to keep explaining it. You've got to try to reason with it, or you're the one withholding it. Like, why didn't you tell us in the first month of your administration? Mm-hmm. So that's my reasoning with it, is that it's just too far out for the president. So what is it going to take? One of the byproducts of this whole thing, have you noticed that every photo that we've ever had of an extraterrestrial craft of some kind, you notice that they're always in the distance, blurry, cannot be quite proven, and are always just out of reach, and that there isn't necessarily the attempted landing in a major metropolitan area where 300 people got out their smartphones and took a photo of it.
And so what is the reason for that, to the best of your understanding?
My reasoning is that ET knows that we're a very primitive society, knows that we're a fear-based society, and knows that we are not mature enough as a species to make that leap or that welcome. An attempted landing in a major metropolitan area like, whatever, Golden Gate Park or somewhere in the United Kingdom would cause fantastic fear that would ripple through the markets. I hate to say it, but you know, we have a medium of exchange. It does go back to a money question. Mm-hmm. We have a medium of exchange. The markets would be rocked with fear, because we are now dealing with the uncontrollable and the unknown. And motion pictures and culture right now doesn't even support it, because every time we go to a movie and there's an ET theme in it, they're always coming to put you on a dinner plate or something, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not very friendly, and it always ends in a war, whereas we got to get them before they get us. I mean, we're really just, I hate to say it, but we're intelligent, but we're kind of just above apes probably to them. Because remember, they're transcending the incredible distance it would even take to get here. And with that, they come and they look at the state of the world, mm-hmm. you know, the rotting and decay, the continuous wars, the atmosphere being polluted. And they probably say, you're not ready. You're not ready to be ushered into the next realm of evolution, you know?
Interesting. If people want to find out more about you, because you have books, you have events, you have music, and so many other things going on, how would they find out about you?
Just find me at robertperella.com, robertperella.com, or come and see me at Contact in the Desert.
And
And that's coming up.
We are definitely going to talk about that in the next hour. You are here listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, and broadcast all over the world. And we'll be back with more Robert Perala and Inner Journey right after the top of the hour.
My name is Greg Friedman. I am a modern version of those that have existed in every culture. I am a guide. For years, I have taken people all over the world to work with indigenous elders in exotic locations, only to show you that you are the magic, and we just help you realize it. It can be terrifying to look at our fears, and sometimes even more so to look at our strengths. I take you out into the wild, into the unknown, for an inner journey.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. If you want to find out more about us, so we're on social media at Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. You want to email us your questions or your problems or your praises, you're welcome to do so at greg@gregfriedman.com. And if you'd like to check out a lot of things that are coming up, including some journeys all over the world, and specifically this time out to Peru once again to go work with a Shipibo shaman in the jungle, go to gregfriedman.com. But right now, we are here with somebody who is incredibly brilliant and really just beautifully open to every single thing that I've asked him, even if it seems a bit impertinent or flippant. Robert, thank you for sharing your wisdom, and thank you for doing it in such a solidly positive, firm ego manner that you're not offended. Instead, you're willing to go on an exploration with us.
Thanks, Greg. Wonderful.
All right.
And by the way, you mentioned that you had Greg Braden on your show and Linda Moulton Howe. You know, I'm a student of them. Those are real researchers. I don't consider myself actually a real researcher. I consider myself a finder of extraordinary things in the human experience, and like to share those things. But Greg Braden, my goodness, now that's a real researcher. And Linda Moulton Howe goes without saying. I listen to them, and they are nothing short of remarkable in their findings.
Yeah, both of them were incredibly fascinating in their own way. And Greg was just a treat, and we're going to have him on in the very near future once again. We both just had a blast with one another. You know, we left off talking about why aliens are not landing on the beach in Laguna in the middle of the summer. And you basically said, yeah, well, you know, humans are intelligent. They're just not quite up to the same level. I have a theory, because very recently, in the recent past few weeks, the Navy has changed some orders, and they said now they are open and encouraging to have pilots report unidentified flying objects. And my feeling on this, and I'm curious as to how you feel about this, my feeling is that this is sort of like don't ask, don't tell with Clinton in the having gay people in the service. That is his way of just putting a crack in the door, a little toe, so that we could open it up to fully integrating everything. And I really do feel like this may be a way that the U.S. government is shaking the curtains and getting us prepared to understand what's going on with aliens. What do you feel about that?
I agree. You know, they've got their backs against the wall. You know, this is a very difficult thing. You know, the Russians are loosening their grip on this thing. And you know, the thing is, the iPhone changed everything. When everyone became a reporter and everyone could take a picture or a video in real time, suddenly the frequency of being able to capture an anomaly increased a thousandfold.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force and the Defense Department can't continue to say, well, we really don't recognize that. That makes them look stupid. They can't really say there is nothing out there because there's all these blips on everyone's phones. So they're kind of my guess is that they're tiptoeing into it, like you were saying earlier, sort of like, there's a little crack in the door. There's a little foot in the door now of acknowledging it without having to look like they're completely withholding. So they're finding this medium ground, like, well, let's go through the Navy Department.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we can say, yeah, there's something. We hear what you're saying, and we recognize it. And there's, because some of this footage from some of these F-16s, even one in my own presentation, the F-15s, F-16s are doing, you know, sorties and flybys and things like that, and they're picking things up. And sometimes that recording actually is making its way into the public domain somehow, even though it's classified material. So,
mm-hmm.
Like you say, it's a foot in the door, and they might as well admit something.
And you know, you deal with this a lot, but you said yourself, you deal with this for all of this entire world from a very different perspective. And I want to shift gears a little bit before we get into Contact in the Desert, if you don't mind, and go into meditation. And for a long time, you've been saying that meditating is really understanding that our thoughts are real things that could travel across space and time. One, how did you come to learn that? And two, could you elaborate on that?
Well, one, researchers in 2007 discovered for the first time that our thoughts aren't actually being originated in the brain, that they are being originated just above the crown mm-hmm. of your head. They're actually originating in the spirit. Now, how they know that, I don't have the wherewithal, but they feel that thought is independent somewhat of brain function, just because they're able to measure, they know so much about the brain's function physically, and that the brain appears more like a housing unit for memory and repressed memories. It's a storage unit. But the tracing the origin of thought itself, they can actually see it in some forms of photography, where they can see in the field itself is around the body. It's actually dictating everything. It's causing the blood and the cell structure and everything to go where it's supposed to go, and minus diseases and decay, which is degeneration, mm-hmm. another story. But they now know that we are actually spirits. They would say, well, like you said, you know, we're spirits having a human experience. You know, there's a spirit, and then we're occupying a physical body for an interim time. We should take real good care of it, which means we're not really designed actually to go all day long, wake up at 6:30 in the morning and go all the way to 11 at night. Actually, the body is best served when it takes a respite somewhere during that period. And it's very important to still the mind and let your cell structure and everything calm down a little bit. We call it meditation.
So explain to our listeners what you feel the appropriate way to meditate and the length to meditate is for, if you would.
Well, as many techniques, you know, going when I was a kid, you know, we used to study Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, you know, and he said one thing that was really incredible. People forget that John Lennon and George Harrison actually lived in an ashram for a little over 2 months in the period of 1968. And when they got back, the press asked John Lennon something that really stuck with me my whole life. And they asked John Lennon, when he came back to England from the Himalayas, he was in the Himalayas where, in Rishikesh, it's where the Ganges meets the plains. It's in a beautiful area of India. And they asked him, well, what did you learn with this guru and this meditation you've been doing and everything? Mm-hmm. And he said, we learned that you had to sit still. Or you're never going to know.
Uh-huh.
Or you're never going to know. And I thought, I get it. And of course, my sister would say, Robert, I don't get that. What do you mean? I said, well, it means if you sit still, if you took 20 minutes a day and sat still, completely still, you might allow something to, you know, to reveal itself. You know, we're always enamored by the material plane, reasoning, differentiating things. Ruminating. A lot of us are never even living in the moment. We're living, you know, largely out of the moment. We're thinking about that person that hurt us in the past. We're thinking about the anxiety of what could happen just a week from now. But very few of us are actually living exactly in this moment, the only moment you really have, and actually being really still and then saying, yeah, I wish to be still, and I wish to let whatever comes forth for me that might serve me. And if there is a divine intelligence, I'm asking for it to reveal itself. And so that actually can be accessed at some point. A lot of the people that practice that meditation report, as you know, they've been on your shows. You report remarkable accessing of a well of dreams, a repository of. Thought considerations. Let me ask you something, Greg. How many times have you ever kind of just sat by yourself and sat still, and then a fant- fantastic thought comes into your mind, right? And you're trying, you witness that thought, and you're just completely like fantastic. And you think, and then a minute later, you go, "What was that?" And then it goes away,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're left with it, like, "What was that? I suddenly was extremely intelligent and had a concept there, and now I can't remember even what it was." Well, that's a lot of times spirit imparting a consideration for you that sort of downloads into your spirit, and then later can be recalled by you at a point where you need to sort of recall it. There's tools that are given to us, and they're actually put into our spirit, and we have to allow our spirit to receive that.
Absolutely agree with that. You know, I liken it to driving down the freeway at 120 miles an hour. You know, you're going to get somewhere, but odds are you ain't going to see a lot along the way, and you are upping the factor of possibility of danger dramatically and all kinds of things that you can crash into. But if you're still, if you're just sitting still, the amount that you can take in, the amount that you can recognize is only limited by your own personal vision. You've talked about a divine intelligence as well. And you talk about a divine intelligence being all around us. If that is true, what does that really mean to you? What does it mean when you say a divine intelligence is all around us? And secondly, I tend to be asking you two-parters tonight. I don't know why, but I am. And secondly, how do we connect with it?
Well, the first thing is, people will claim that they have access to the divine intelligence. The origin of thought. That's a big one. I don't think we really know where the actual origin of thought comes from. There's a divine intelligence that is surrounding, that is combining all things together, that surrounds the entire globe. And it holds the fabric of the reality together, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its weather pattern, and it has its energy that just the surrounding area that keeps everything somewhat intact underneath the troposphere and the ionosphere, etc., and keeps the material plane intact. That's one side of the intelligence. It's seasonal. The leaves on the tree know to drop when it's becoming fall, although that's being challenged mm-hmm. with climate change.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole other school of thought that will argue that one. And then there's the intelligence around the body that gives you indications in your emotional body. The emotional body is somehow feel a little bit of trepidation. You're not even sure where that's even coming from. Let's put it this way. That intelligence that's in your field is an intelligence that is also surrounded by people that are on the next plane above the material plane. These are lost loved ones, discarnates, ultra-terrestrials, occasionally angelics, the seraphim, cherubim, the B'nai Elohim. Actually, everyone is walking with a committee, although they would doubt that.
You got exactly where I was going to go next. And just because of that, I'm going to cut you off, and we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, that's exactly where I'd like to go with you, Robert. I'd like to talk about committee. So you are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and we're going to be back with more Robert Perala, our guest this evening, and all kinds of talk about aliens and spirit and the crossover on Inner Journey with Greg Friedman right after this short break. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. This evening, we are hanging out with Robert Perala. Robert Perala does something incredibly unique in the field of UFOs. Robert has a very specific way of melding the world of divinity, of spirit, and the world of aliens and UFOs. That ain't no easy feat, and that's a very tight line you are walking, Robert.
We're all walking that line. That's in the multi-millions. Yes, yes, that's the planet Earth.
Now, before we left for break, you were about to get into something that I find incredibly interesting. You said that basically we're all walking, each one of us, every single person on this planet, every individual is walking around with a committee along with us. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think one of the great authors, I think, that articulates this really well is James Van Praagh. He has a book out there that I always recommend to people, Adventures of the Soul. I think says this very eloquently. Mm-hmm. It's one of the books he's put out in the last couple of years. And basically, he was saying not all your thoughts are your own, and you're sort of walking with people that check in on you in one form or another. And as you grow, they grow. Just because you have run out of time, and you can no longer, the body can't withstand the material plane anymore or the physical body anymore, doesn't mean you're exempt from learning life's lessons. So there's our parents. This is Mother's Day. I would say this, take heart, because for those of you who have lost, you know, a mother to the other side, or a father, or worse yet, a child, know this. I've spent 35 years in this. I hope I'm pretty accurate in this. And my humble opinion says you will see them again. You will see them again as sure as we're talking to each other. It's part of the process of things. Now, because they run out of time, doesn't mean that they never see you again. In fact, they check in with us. In fact, immediately upon their losing their physical body, that first few weeks is a wonderful time when they are still very evident here. Some souls cross over and are getting used to the new plane again. Some are very familiar, cross over very easily, and some walk with you directly and or check in on you for years to come and watch you grow old. And that committee changes. There's discarnates. The discarnates are people that have like passed over already before us. Those are human beings that have lived here, simply ran out of time. And then there is the extraterrestrial committee, and that committee is made up of different visitors.
Oh no, before you get in there, because that's a whole different. I do want to go down that road, but you laid so much out on the table once again. I want to circle back to some of the things that you expressed. If I understood what you said correctly, what you said is, okay, we got a committee, but they're not there as our, lack of a better way of saying it, our angels, our guides, our helpers. They are there because they are learning through teaching us, and they grow through this experience, and we grow through having them there. But they're not necessarily always going to guide us appropriately because they're just screwed up and growing as well. Is that accurate?
Not completely. It's not. I don't think it's exactly like that, because they're. It's not like they stay completely in the state that they were before they passed away at that level of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them will. It will be as though they've woken from a dream and understand the greater picture in a much greater way. And many of them will look at their choices that they made while they were here, and think, "What was I thinking of? You know, well, it was right in front of me." And some will want to impart things to you that you need to know. They'll guide you. You may feel not all your thoughts are your own. Sometimes when you're driving down the highway, you'll you'll think, oh, I don't know if I should really get into this lane or get into this experience or that side of town. Sometimes that's actually them guiding you a little bit, and you hear their imparting to you in your own mind's voice. So it'd be very disconcerting if you suddenly heard a woman's voice saying, "Greg, can I answer that question for a minute? I have another idea on that."
I don't know. I kind of get. I'm not saying it's happened before. I'm just not saying it didn't happen before.
And it can. Yeah. You know, but most of the time we hear it in our own mind's voice, and we think it's us that is thinking that thought. You might say you're sharing the space, and sometimes they're nudging you a little bit, and you don't even know the difference. In fact, you'll deny. Most people deny. Oh, there's nothing there. You know, it's your imagination. I said, no. I think that it seemed like that something was talking to me, like a little voice. Mm-hmm. I've heard them out loud. I've seen them, their footsteps in their places. So the atmosphere is loaded with this kind of thing. I've seen it since I was a child. I was taken to doctors clear back to Reverend John Roger Hinkins, who only passed away like 2-3 years ago. I have reel-to-reel tapes of me when I was 7 years old saying, "There's people in the room at night. You must have seen them." And they go, no, I don't believe we've seen anything. I go, "Well, you can kind of see through them." And they, you know, "There's people on the other, there's people that are coming in the house." And then later you look at James Van Praagh, Barbara Marciniak, you look at all these people that are kind of enunciating the same thing. So We're not alone.
Yeah. James is a sweetheart. He's another, you're naming a bunch of people that have been guests on our program. And James is just really phenomenal. And when he does readings, he is tuned in. I have seen him do just some astounding things. Going back to this, however, now I stopped you when you started to shift from ancestors that were deceased loved ones or other people that have gone to the other side. Now, how does this transition into aliens?
Well, you know, there's a host of people that are visiting here, and they're coming out of what the lost books of Job in the Bible. And I'm not talking necessarily about the standard edition or the King James Version. I'm talking about there's a lot of texts that are from Bible college and institutes, as well as other things like the Vedic text, if you want, that refer to this cluster of stars that is about 440 million light years from here. This is would be the seven. It refers to the seven sisters. This is the Pleiades, and I believe that men and women are coming out of this area of these. There's more than seven central suns. It says that you are descendants of the Lost Books of Job. Say you are descendants of the house of Pleiades, and then it goes on to describe this particular aspect of our experience. And we have. Astronomers know this area as they name this area actually the Pleiades. It's Taygeta, Maia, Hera, Electra, Alcyon, Merope. I'm missing a couple.
It's like dwarves.
Yeah. So yes. So this area, I believe, is an area that is vested in our particular paradigm here. And those people that are coming here are being born from that aspect and are being born here in the material world. Now, when you're born here, you wouldn't have access necessarily consciously to the other side of where you came from and know that that you've left a paradigm that looks very similar in many areas, like this one that we have now, in this area of space. And so I believe if we're going to name the aliens, I'm going to name them as the Pleiadians. I think that they have a very vested interest here, and I think that that humanity is at different levels there as well as here, and I think we see it in a multitude of different ways, from physical to the well of dreams, as I call it, the dream state. I asked James Van Praagh a while back. I said, "James, you know, is it that when we dream, when we lose a dream, it seems exactly as real as this moment is to us now? In fact, I've even read copyrights in books in fine print where my mind couldn't have made up that detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, is it sometimes that we're actually going there? Is that actually sometimes a physical place that still exists after our spirit somehow goes there and then bounces back into our body? He said, yeah, actually it's a combination of both. Some are made up, the spirit makes up a scenario, and then others times you go out of your body every night. You know, in fact, in my new book, the revised edition of Divine Architect, we have a chapter in there called "Death is a Great Way for an Argument to Break Out."
I love that.
So, because many people, when they go to the other side, when they've died in their sleep or on an operating table, an argument breaks out. They said, I couldn't possibly be dead because I'm talking to you, aren't I? Hello. And everything is real around here, isn't it? Hello. And they go, yeah. And sometimes the spirit needs to be, it takes a while for them to realize that they're actually not in a dream state, that they're not going back to their physical body. And in fact, that incarnation is over and that they're on the other side. And they're surprised on some levels that it looked exactly like this,
mm-hmm.
and that they were expecting more. And sometimes there is more, but sometimes it's exactly like this.
How has this knowledge colored your life personally? How has it made a difference in your life, knowing the connection between wisdom and spirit and aliens and humans?
Well, the first thing is when my sister looks across the dinner table and says, Robert, you're scaring the family, okay? You're scaring the family with this stuff. Why can't you be normal like everyone else? Okay, look, we're going to Olive Garden tonight, and we're not going to talk about that kind of stuff that you're into, the origin of the something or other, whatever that thing you called it. Mm-hmm. I said, the soul? He said, yeah, like soul, you know? So it's gotten me into trouble. It takes a while for people. Look, there's a lot of people that listen to your show that are maybe coming into it for the first time, right? And
right.
Hearing Greg Friedman, and boy, you sound pretty far out to them because you've been in this work a long time. And for others who have not been in this work, they're sitting there, you know, their faces are melting going, what? And they have a lot to consider. And so it's like that. The world is filled with a lot of distractions and people really, you know, it's difficult sometimes to come out with this work. And others, you know, the most wonderful moments I love is when somebody comes up to me with tears in their eyes and their father is very ill, or when I'm sitting with one of my hospice patients and you can reassure them that everything is connected and that something wonderful is going to happen, and that because they're getting ready to make their transition, there's no reason to fear. Something wonderful is going to happen. And it's very reassuring.
Absolutely. Your latest book is once again called what?
Well, we had the second book was called The Divine Architect, The Art of Living and Beyond. And the revised edition of that book has been sitting here ready to be released for some time. It just means that I have to put a few more new things into it. I was very blessed by some of the people that signed off a while ago that allowed us to paraphrase their contribution to the field of spirituality and personal growth. We had Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra. Greg Braden is actually in the book, yeah. And we asked these people, can we paraphrase what your contribution is in this particular area?
Mm-hmm.
So The Divine Architect, The Art of Living Beyond, the revised edition, definitely should be out. It better be out soon. It's up to me. And
well, get to work. We're waiting around here, will you?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Once again, if they want to find out more about you, they're going to go to your website. It is?
RobertPerala.com. That's PERALA.com.
And what are some of the things they're going to find there when they go?
Really, my website's fairly simple. It's really a tool to find out what my work is about.
I hope you brought enough for everybody. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, you know, just how to contact me. I have a few YouTubes on there. I don't have a large library of all this different kind of work. I have enough to give them a real taste of a few things. But really, I'm not the repository of wisdom on that site, but it's a fun site to visit. Yeah.
All right. We are here with Robert Perala. We're going to come back and talk about Contact in the Desert. And you are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman.
I have a place that I'd like to call home. You've got this look on your face. You're looking at me like a dog with a bone.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. This evening, we are hanging out with Robert Perala. Robert is an expert in alien exploration, but more importantly, he has done something, and I really do find this fascinating, Robert. And let me just put this out to you. Do you know of anybody that has really taken the world of alien and UFOs, extraterrestrials, and brought it down into such a exploration of spirit and divinity the way that you have?
Yeah, there's lots of people out there. Drunvalo Melchizedek is very good. Mm-hmm. I was on a show last week with a woman that's down in your area. Where is that? Huntington Beach, I think. That far from you?
Yeah, it's not too far, not too close.
Okay, Southern California, well, all is the same to me up here. But, you know, I mean, you know, it might be 300 miles difference, but it's all the same. A woman named Georgia Lambert, I thought, was very good. I don't know if you had her on your show or not, but she's very good. But there's so many out there that are just have an eloquent way of kind of tying it in you know, together. I'm a student of James Van Praagh, Greg Braden. We've mentioned a number of them here tonight. I like Barbara Marciniak quite a bit. She wrote a book called Path to Empowerment. And I think that I know channeled material is very subjective. I get that. But saying that you're bringing through the Pleiadians and this kind of thing, and that they are the voice in this book, actually, I think it's extremely eloquently written. It's a treatise on the human experience. I read it several times. I thought that's probably the way that it is. That's probably, like I said, a combination of different vested interest here, and largely the Pleiades. That's not to say that, you know, the architects in Giza and Luxor and, you know, our ancestors in this area aren't still evident here. Astrologers and readers talk about the constellation of Sirius and Orion, and that humans are coming from this experience. It says it in various texts, references about these particular areas, the Sirius, Pleiades, etc. So, you know, you add it all up, you look for consistencies. It's probably, you know, we're not alone. We're just not ready to be quite birthed into a direct, you know, contact experience, because I think we have a lot of problems now.
Interesting choice of words, both talking about the whole cast of characters that are involved in this world and contact, because coming up very soon is something that you are going to be participating in. That is Contact in the Desert. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, Contact in the Desert's in its seventh year, and it's at the Renaissance Hotel in Indian Wells. And it's at the end of this month. It's in a four and a half day period, and where you can, you know, witness all the greats. You've got David Wilcock. You've got Giorgio Tsoukalos. You've got not only 50 of the leading researchers. They've gone all the way to 57 researchers, and so you have Michael Tellinger, Jerry Van Doniken. They call it the Woodstock of UFOs. I mean, you know, it's May 31st through June 3rd. It's at the it's in Indian Wells at the Renaissance Hotel. And I get to be in this. I'm kind of playing a funny role this year. I'm actually not directly presenting. I'm actually emceeing, which they like my MC work, because I get excited about other people's contributions, and I'm fairly good at enunciating and introducing one of the leading researchers who are specialists in that field. And then my little fledging music outfit with Malcolm Dane and Linda Russell, called Wings Over the Desert, is going to be there somewhere during the weekend. And I would say get a ticket now, because the tickets have been selling for a while. And the hotel, while the hotel is sold out, there are adjacent hotels that can accommodate you. People that come every year, because they say it's like nothing I've ever experienced. It's absolutely fantastic.
And is there anybody that you specifically make a point of seeing while you're there?
I always like Eric Van Doniken for the older stuff, the Anunnaki and everything. I think Giorgio Tsoukalos from the History Channel, Ancient Aliens, is always finding something new. I think David Wilcock is very startling. He's very intelligent. I don't know that I agree with everything, but I like him very, very much.
Oh, you are such a good diplomat. Startling is a great word.
It's startling, yeah. Like, some people go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you have to come out and judge for yourself, folks. You know, I mean, they all have their opinions. And believe me, at the dinner table at night, when the day winds down, they're all going, let me tell you what I heard today.
Uh-huh.
And it's wild.
It really is. I mean, the whole thing is a gathering of so many people that are deeply immersed in this world from very, very different perspectives. And if people want to find out more about Contact in the Desert, couldn't be simpler, because it's contactinthedesert.com. About as simple as that one gets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, You have done so many of these different conventions and workshops. Is there something that you found in this gathering, a common through line? Is there something that really winds up being a poignant, consistent reflection?
Yeah, very evident. One, don't miss your life. You're actually here on assignment. We fall into the material plane and we think this is it. This is all there is. And then we get sidetracked with arguments. We get sidetracked with hurt, trauma, abuse, codependency, narcissism. The addictions are huge on this planet. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when you graduate from the material plane, you'll look back at this and realize what a remarkable opportunity I was afforded in the material world there with all of its diversity. It's the darkest of places in existence, and it's the lightest places in existence, and it has everything in between. It's very it's very cunning. It's very baffling. A lot of people, reach a very happy ending and can look back at their life and say, I did well. I would say try to understand or practice the virtues each day. Think of this as a school where you have a chance to understand unconditional love, patience, tolerance, selflessness, forgiveness, random acts of kindness, supporting your brother and sister. There's a chance here. Some people get off this planet, wow, with such amazing, beautiful karma. And some of them come back, and you wonder, why is it that some people are born into such a comfort and having a little easier life, and why are some people born in a very difficult life? Well, that answer is still, I'm not going to be the one to tell you the dividing line on that, but I would say try to just take the opportunity each day with patience, learn to forgive yourself, and realize that this is the school, this is the place to be.
I got to tell you, there was one word that I really, really loved that you used. I mean, it's not discounting the others, of course, but you talk about leaving this world as a graduation. First of all, I find that incredibly poetic and beautiful. And secondly, can you tell me why you see it in that particular regard?
Yeah, I've been on the other side while I've been in my physical body here. Not to go into the whole story real quickly, just essentially 47 out of 50 of us got violently ill in Luxor, in Egypt, in 1997. I got so ill that I was told that I had to check into a hospital. A doctor gave me some kind of injection. I was outside the incredibly, it almost sounds like a movie, right? I was outside the pyramids. That sounds so cliche. I was outside the pyramids, and then I went outside my body. Oh, my God. Please. But it happened. And I went to the other side, and I was there for what, I don't know, it's hard to say. You'd say, if you were going to measure it in time, you might say 3 days. But I saw that the world beyond this is very much exactly like this. And I realized when I came back to my body and I was very sick. I mean, Greg, I was green. I don't wish anybody get that sick. When I came back into my body, I sobbed uncontrollably because I was realizing the gift of life had been given back to me. And I realized, oh, my God, I'm going to get to live again in this world. And that moment I couldn't describe. So majestic.
That's absolutely beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And we are to that place. Last question of the evening. Anything at all you'd feel remiss if you didn't share with our listeners this evening?
It's Mother's Day. Why don't we end on Mother's Day? Because, our mothers are just people. They've done the best they can. Some of them have made some mistakes. We're human. We're just like that, too. We're all learning. We're all in this school. Maybe take the time to, if your mother's not here, to know that she will be with you again and that you will see her again, I promise you. And if she is with you in the material world here, why don't you go over and do a little random act of kindness and tell her, how much you love her, and that we're here to practice unconditional love with everyone, even beyond our mothers, you know, animals, and parents and friends and family, is to practice unconditional love. And that's my message. Yeah.
Thank you very much. You've been a real treat and very illuminating, and I love the perspective you take into this world. We are here with Robert Perala, and if you want to check out his books, his website, his music, his events, go to robertperala.com. Robert, thank you very much for joining us on Inner Journey this evening.
Thank you, Greg. Many blessings.
Yes, sir. And if you've got more questions and we weren't able to get to you, please feel free to email us at greg@gregfriedman.com, and social media is Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. As I said, we have a trip to Peru that is coming up in the not too distant future. Check into that. It is going to be off the hook. And I say this every single week. There's a bunch of people that work their booties off to put this show on for us. I am incredibly grateful to them, but most of all, I am grateful to you, the listening audience. This show does not exist without your participation. For that, and so much more, we are hugely grateful. You've been listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. Good night.